Okay. All right, Earl, do you want to do like an intro?
Sure.
We're here with...
Are we ready?
Yeah.
Ready to start?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay.
Welcome to the Sports Parent Podcast, where we talk about sports and parenting and the intersection between sports and parenting, hosted by bestselling author Jeff Pearlman.
And Catherine Pearlman, also known as the Family Coach. That's so cinematic. Our guest this week is Jeannie Buss, one of the all-time greatest people of all time. I'm going to go
triple all-time.
She's the part owner of the Los Angeles Lakers and president of the team as well, and one of the best people I've met in sports. We have some interesting family parenting issues this week, or one in specific. One specifically or in specific, would I say?
Aren't you the writer?
Yeah, I'm just going to say one that's unique, which is earlier today we found ourselves at home. Your father was here. We had some friends here. And we started talking about the O.J. Simpson case. And our son, Emmett, who is 9, was sitting there. And we got a little overly specific about the O.J. Simpson case, I think. It was clear that someone was murdered, that it was bloody, some bad stuff. And I would say, it was his bedtime an hour and 20 minutes later, and the boy could not sleep. And I guess my question for you there, family coach.
Yeah.
Was it a mistake to talk about O.J. Simpson in front of a 9-year-old boy?
You know, it was something that as it was happening, he was just sitting there quietly watching the basketball game, and it was almost like he wasn't there, and we were having grown-up conversation, but... And we think sometimes like, oh, well, you know, this is not going to bother him. What's it, you know, but he has a vivid imagination. He's 9. And I think blood and murder is enough to kind of set him off. And that was about a half hour before bedtime. So, I don't know, I just think it's sometimes we have adult conversations in front of kids and we think they're not really listening or they don't really understand what you're saying. But I think that they do.
It's also kind of a slippery slope. Like you start feeling comfortable talking around your kids about stuff, you know, like. We've talked on the show before about hip hop, just as an example, or you watch a movie where there's a sex scene, but it's not a graphic sex scene, it's just kind of implied. And then you feel a little more comfortable with things. And I feel like your guard easily slips when you're a parent. And suddenly you're talking about the former Buffalo Bills halfback, you know, stabbing his wife.
Yeah.
With a knife. And you're like, where the hell did I go wrong with this one? So I'm going to take bad for this one. That was my bad.
Well, I think about how many times we have whispered conversations or whatever. And all I have to do is whisper ice cream. And our daughter, I mean, she can hear from upstairs, like 5 rooms away. And I think that we think that they can't hear. A lot of times they can. It's a little reminder for us. We need to be more cognizant.
I just want to bring up real quick. You and I have an old trick that we highly recommend. I'm sure you agree with me. Which is we both speak passable Spanish. Is that?
Second grade Spanish.
Maybe third. And we've used it a lot over the years when we want to talk about topics such as O.J. Simpson or ice cream or anything that we don't want our kids to hear about. See?
Well, when kids are little, you can spell around
them. I
want
you to say that in Spanish. See?
See. When kids are little, you know, you could spell and then eventually they can start spelling. And so that all of a sudden we were left without this tool. We could talk in front of them. Luckily, we've had Spanish, but unfortunately... Our kids have picked up enough Spanish over the years that we have to be careful.
Like helado no longer just sails by.
You Hermana, can't just sail by. They know that. Hermana. I mean, they know a lot.
But if you say, like, I mean, chocolate is kind of easy, but dulces, if we say dulces, which is sweet in Spanish.
Yeah, they get that.
It's not last anymore.
Yeah.
Today's show, before we really get too crazy on this one, is sponsored by our good friend at B2 Design. They take pride in planning, strategizing, organizing your online content. To make your message clear and concise, B2 Design works with clients of all sizes. The family coach uses B2 Design to create her website and logo. How are you feeling about it these days?
Still love it.
And my website was also designed by B2 Design. What do you think?
Love it.
For more information on building a beautiful new website or updating an old one, get in touch with our homeboy. Can I call him our homeboy?
I don't think so.
Brant Beaupre at brant@btwodesign.net.
So what's up this week, girl?
Well, Muhammad Ali died, and I'm going to tell real quick if that's cool with you. I actually met Muhammad Ali once, and I'll just tell a super quick story
about
it.
Great story.
I was working at Sports Illustrated back in the late 90s, and an editor there named Rich O'Brien said, do you want to go meet Muhammad Ali?
Do I want to meet Muhammad? That's rhetorical.
No, I do not want to meet. No. So I was in office. I was a reporter at the time, kind of low level. And I went to...
How did you even get that? I mean, why would he come up to you and say, do you want to meet Muhammad?
Well, so we got... When you work in a magazine or somewhere, you'll get these press releases every now and then. And they may not be stories you want to cover, but, you know, it's Muhammad Ali will be appearing in New York to promote. I remember he had a foundation opening up or a facility opening up in his hometown of Louisville, Kentucky, and he was here to promote it. So we sent a reporter, and it was me. And I show up, and I think it's going to be whatever, 20, 30, 40, I don't even know, 100 people. And it's me, it's a table in a small room, and it's me, Muhammad Ali in a chair to my right, Dick Schaap, the legendary journalist to my left, Layla Ali, his wife, is it Layla? I always get the, his wife, and a PR guy. So we're sitting there, and, you know, Champ, this is Jeff, hey, hey, hey. We're sitting there, and the meeting is going on, and they're talking about this opening, this thing, and the guy goes, so what do you think about that, Champ? And Ali is sleeping, literally.
Right next to you.
Right next to me, sleeping. And all of a sudden, he goes, there's a black guy, a Puerto Rican, and a Mexican in a car. Who's driving? The PR guy goes, who's driving, Champ? And he goes, the police. And they just falls back asleep.
Mic drop.
And that was my meeting with Muhammad Ali. And I will say the thing that I found very interesting, so many people on Facebook and on Twitter talked about the time they met Muhammad Ali.
Yeah.
I had a, we had a friend over here today who actually told about the time she met Muhammad Ali. I don't think there's anybody in the world who met more people than Muhammad Ali.
Yeah, I actually kind of agree with that. I was really enjoying all the stories that people were telling, pictures and stories about the time they met Muhammad Ali. And it's just really interesting. Why do you think that is? Why do you think that so many people have an individual story?
Well, I think he became almost like a Pope-like figure. I really do. I can't name someone. The only one who even comes in the same stratosphere in American culture right now is Magic Johnson. You know, as far as a guy who just brings love and joy and happiness, and he's gregarious and he's self-deprecating. There's so few people like that. And Ali also, he comes from a black and white age, you know, where you see these pictures of him, they just hold this weight. And there's something about him. I mean,
you're saying photography. I'm thinking it was literally a black and white
age. Yeah, well, it was. But I just think, like, even like Emmett, I told our son, Muhammad Ali died. He knew who Muhammad Ali was. And I don't think we ever had a conversation about him, but he knew who he was. It's just something about that guy that kind of sailed.
Yeah, well, I mean, for me, I mean, he has so many quotes that are heartwarming, funny, but also really get to the core of issues that were really important in the 60s and 70s and sadly are equally as important today. I mean, not that much has changed about what he was fighting for.
Yeah, I would agree. And it's funny. I mentioned this the other day. I was somewhere and someone asked me, how you doing? Guy I didn't know that well. And I said, yeah, I'm not that, you know, I'm just sad Muhammad Ali died. And he said, yeah, I didn't realize he was a draft dodger. And I was thinking, that's such a limited understanding of such a complicated and unique and fascinating guy. And I just think for me and for you, I feel like this is a great opportunity as a parent to sort of talk about him, just as it was when Prince died, as an example. You have these people and they kind of, they're around and you're aware of them. And all of a sudden you have this opportunity to show your kids a tape of Ali fighting Sonny Liston, or you can play Prince's 1999 and have this real cultural discussion about what these people meant. I think it's gold.
Well, to me also, I don't think of Muhammad Ali as the draft dodger. I think of him as a protester. And he wasn't getting out of going to Vietnam because he wanted to continue college or, you know, he didn't want to, you know, be far from home. He was against it because people hadn't done anything to him and he was fighting for those basic rights here in the United States. So to me, that is a bigger conversation that we can have with our kids. And
Did we get a letter?
We did get a letter. You know, I have to say, we are on our fourth episode, and this has been really fun for us, but we're trying to get more people to listen, and it's hard to know sometimes if we're having an impact, people are listening. And
numbers are pretty good, though.
Numbers are good. We're making good progress. And we got a letter from George, and interestingly, he talks about Muhammad Ali. And so he was responding to our conversation last week about how players aren't giving autographs anymore. So he wrote to us, I enjoyed listening to you and your wife. Muhammad Ali had the autograph thing down. When he came for the Laker games at the Forum, he would bring a briefcase full of pamphlets on Islam that were already signed, and he would give out to everyone who asked him. And then for dorks like me who wanted something else signed, he would stop and sign the autograph. And actually, I was just thinking, this kind of goes with what you were saying. This guy has a personal story, too.
Right.
anyway, he brought up an interesting point that nowadays some athletes are realizing that dealers are trying to depersonalize autographs and then and sell them, that they're signing their names and attaching like to Jeff, yeah, and the J from Jeff is attached to their, you know.
Well, if you personalize it, it loses its value completely.
Exactly. So anyway.
I just want to say one thing I thought of. I didn't bring this up last week, but when I was a kid, 1984, my parents took my brother and I to California, and we went to a game at Candlestick Park between the Mets and the Giants. And the Mets star at the time was a guy named George Foster. And Foster handed out, you would go up and ask for autographs, and he had in his back pocket, he had this thick stack of cards, and it had a picture of him, an autograph, which he did sign, and the words, "What you are is God's gift to you, and what you do with what you are is your gift to God." Now, that's 32 years ago. The thing has no value whatsoever, but I still have it in a photo album. And I think that is really the value of a really good personalized signature, and much more valuable than some collector giving me $5 to sell it, you know, give it to.
Well, I go back to what's special is the experience, but
I agree.
Anyway, so one other thing I wanted to bring up this week is the cost of road races. So you have been a runner pretty much all your life. And when I met you, I became a runner. Thank you. And our son likes to run.
Sure does.
And races has been a big part of our life. In fact, that was all of our courtship. We did a lot of races. We ran together. And
two marathons.
We ran two marathons together. Thank you for that. And doing races together, doing races as a family has been something that we've done for a long time. Has been really special. Mm-hmm. But over the last decade, I'd say, things have really been changing, and races are now so expensive that they're almost prohibitive. And
not even almost. I would say they are prohibitive for many people.
They are prohibitive for many people. They also don't make a whole lot of sense. So recently, a race in our neighborhood was, you know, celebrating Memorial Day. And for a 5K, it costs to run or walk, I'll have you know, $38 to run or walk 3 miles.
It's 3.1 mile.
Yeah, I can do that for free. And then they have a kid's half mile, a half a mile for $21, and a kid's diaper dash for $15. Yeah. So for $15, I can't even imagine how far that is. Why not have a free kid's race?
Well, first of all, the prices are unjustifiable. And you know, I grew up running a race every weekend. Like, that was my thing. I would say when I was a kid in my prime as a youth runner, 12, 13, and it was like a circuit where you would go race to race to race.
Your dad would take you.
Dad would take me. Mom would take me. Mom's coworker would take me. I would run all these, you know, I would know the people at the races. Average price, $6, $5. Now that was a long time ago.
Yeah.
This does not match the inflation. I mean, it's insane. And the thing is, here's what you get. You get a t-shirt sometimes. You probably get an apple, a banana, maybe a bagel at the end. Yeah. You get marked miles, but of course it's only three of them. Right. So you can get three marked miles. And you get the cost of insurance, which is probably substantial, but unjustifiable. And what bothers me is running is a great sport, and it's so accessible to people.
Right. It's a free sport.
All you have to do is sneakers,
and even crappy ones will work.
That's a funny thing. You do not need expensive sneakers. You don't need expensive shorts. You don't need all the cut. You don't need a Gatorade. You can have a water from your sink. Running is a beautiful, beautiful sport. It's my favorite sport of all time, and is accessible. And what they are doing, I think in the name of greed oftentimes, is taking away the accessibility in that.
It's making an elite sport that only rich people can afford. And actually, we could afford these prices, mm-hmm. but I remember last year when Emmett wanted to run, I couldn't justify it. Like, are we really going to spend $80 for us to run 3 miles one morning right. and get up early to do it?
No, it's crap. It's yeah. really crap. It's frustrating.
All right, Ross, so what's in the news you'd like to chat about today?
Well, I don't know if you heard, but there's a presidential election going on.
Yes, I actually have heard.
Yeah, it's I think it's going to get some play, some coverage.
Yeah.
And it's really interesting. So you may not know this about me. We've only been married 14 years. I am not a huge Donald Trump fan.
Yes, I am aware.
You are?
Yes.
I hate to break that to you. Are you okay?
Yes.
All right, be strong. And I'm not going to make this a political rant because I don't really feel like this is the forum for that. And I know you're nervous about that. I'm not. What I will say, though, is that this election has really done something interesting for my relationship with my kids, which is it has given me an avenue, almost in the same way I just discussed with Ali dying and Prince dying. It's given me an avenue to discuss issues in a very real world sense because they're happening right here. And for example, people probably know by now, Donald Trump, the past few days, said that a judge might be biased about against him because he is quote unquote Mexican. He was born in Indiana, but he's Mexican because he has, his family is, you know, from Mexico. And therefore, Donald Trump thinks this man might be unqualified to judge his case because he would be biased because Donald Trump wants to build a wall. So he says, just as an example. And I've talked about this with our son and with our daughter, and we have these dialogues about it. And what does it mean? And it branches off into discussions about xenophobia and what people see in a candidate versus what people see in another candidate. And one of my favorite things that's happened over the past few months is when my dad was here, the amazing Stanley Perelman, he sat down with Emmett, our son, opened up a newspaper and went through the stories and explained the stories to him. And Emmett now says to me, yeah, I really learned about politics from grandpa. I just think it's whether, and it really doesn't matter if you like Trump or you like Hillary or neither or both, or it's a local race. It's a really good opportunity to explain to your kids what is going on in the world and what these things mean in kind of simplistic terms, because most of these politicians actually speak in simplistic terms.
Yeah. Well, I agree with you. And I think, you know, sometimes the newspaper's out and I catch our daughter just kind of reading, because she can read. She'll read the back of a ketchup bottle if that's all that's available. And I see her reading, and it is an opportunity to have a discussion. And we do get busy in our lives. And sometimes we just think kids don't care or we don't want to bother them. But I think you're right. There are so many issues. And we don't have to talk to them about all of it. But, you know, we're sitting down to the dinner table and we're thinking about, what are we going to talk about? Well, what happened today? Interesting, there was something on the news, and I think as long as it doesn't concern murder and blood, as we previously discussed, it's open for the table.
Yeah, I agree. I also think too often parents, and maybe I did this early on in my parenting career, sorry, career, limit the topic and scope of conversations to things that are very simplistic to kids. How was school today? Who are you playing with? Blah, blah, blah. And there's this whole world out there, and these really interesting things that are going on. And I'm not saying, again, you don't need to talk about O.J. Simpson, how he murdered or didn't murder, or whatever you think, Nicole Brown. But there are a lot of interesting topics to discuss. And one thing I've really enjoyed lately with Emmett is, as you know, I'm writing a book about the old United States Football League, and I know I have the only 9-year-old kid in America who can name, you know, 12 of 18 USFL teams from the 1984 season. And it's just been, sometimes you have these magical discussions with your kids that come out of nowhere. I'm a fan of that.
But I watch him rattle off his USFL trivia or his 80s NFL highlight trivia. And the thing is, I think he cares a little bit, like a teeny bit about USFL. But I think he gets so much joy out of talking to you about the things that you care about. And then he can see how much you get excited by him talking about the USFL, that he wants to talk to you more about the kind of things that you like. And I actually see how kids start adopting their parents' likes. I'm actually being able to see it outside as an observer. He doesn't actually care about the USFL. He's starting to. But because he's reflecting the joy that, I mean, you're just like super excited to talk to him. Oh, he recognizes the logo. He knows about the player. He knows Trump stories. Mm-hmm. And I think he sees your joy in it. It's just kind of nice to watch from the outside. That's, you're having this sort of bonding. And more than anything, I'm happy that you have Emmett to share these stories with, because I like to read about the stories when the book comes.
I appreciate it. I got to say, I've really enjoyed watching the NBA Finals with him thus far, because it's just like an education. And it's really cool. I never thought I'd be a dad who's like, okay, son, let's go to the ball game. You know, and like that's not really me, but it's kind of, I really do enjoy it. And we love going to baseball games. It's sitting there. And best thing I've done as a parent is teach my kid how to score a baseball game. And then he wants to buy the scorebook and keep scoring. Maybe it's because I think it's cool. I don't know. But he enjoys doing it, and it gives me great happiness. And I thank him too.
Well, the funny thing is, we were talking about you taking him to a game or watching basketball or talking USFL. We rarely watch sports.
Yeah, very, very interesting.
But what we do it as a family, and he loves to chat it up with you.
And Casey just loves it.
Well, she actually does love the trivia. She doesn't really like to watch, but she gets into the trivia. She named a bunch of USFL teams. She beat me in the trivia the other day.
Yeah, that was pretty good. We have a very serious news story.
We do, actually, and it relates to sports and parenting quite nicely. So a star swimmer, Brock Allen Turner from Stanford University, was caught raping an unconscious woman last year behind a dumpster. At a fraternity party. He was found guilty of 3 felonies. And this week, the judge sentenced him. And he actually gave him, I think the prosecutors were recommending 6 years, and the judge decided to give him 6 months in a county jail and probation. And the judge said, quote, a prison sentence would have a severe impact on him. I think he will not be a danger to others. So this by itself just really struck me. Like, it was really more about this guy, and there was nothing in there about the victim. But okay, I'll get to that. So, I mean, he was really focusing on how prison would be, like, too much of an impact on this guy. So then I found out that Brock's dad wrote a letter to the judge basically pleading with him about why jail time would be unfair for his son. And I feel like I have to read just a little bit of this letter because it really makes me think about what kind of parenting was going on here. Mm-hmm. And even after the fact, what kind of parenting was going on.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. So Brock's life has been deeply altered forever by the events of January 17th and 18th. He will never be his happy-go-lucky self with that easygoing personality and welcoming smile. Brock always enjoyed certain types of foods and is a very good cook himself. I was always excited to buy him a ribeye steak to grill and get his favorite snack for him. I made sure to hide my favorite snacks, pretzels and chips, because I knew they wouldn't be around long after Brock walked in from swim practice. I just have to stop there. I can't even believe this guy is talking about how he really used to like to buy this guy ribeye steaks after he's been convicted. And there were witnesses of him raping an unconscious girl. But hold on. It's going to get worse.
Ribeye steaks are tasty.
You don't even eat red meat. Okay. So then the dad continues. Now he barely consumes any food and he eats only to exist. These verdicts have broken and shattered him and our family in so many ways. That is a steep price to pay for 20 minutes of action out of 20 plus years of life. Okay, so he only had sex for 20 minutes with this woman while she was unconscious. He shouldn't be affected for that. And we shouldn't wipe out all the rest of his 20 good years.
I'll say this. This is the only thing I can say even slightly. I can appreciate in some small way a father trying to defend his kid. Of course, you know, any parent, you want to stand up for your child. So in a very small way, I can at least understand where the letter is coming from, right? So I'm just saying that.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, I am so horrified by this entire story. I mean, horrified about this story. You're talking about you allegedly raped an unconscious girl.
Right, and there were witnesses. It wasn't like he said, she said. People saw him having sex with her unconscious.
You raped an unconscious... Your son raped a girl while she was out, okay? And you're writing this letter about ribeye and potato chips. Are you freaking kidding me? And this dad should be counting his blessings every day that his son only has whatever it is, 6 months in jail. Because you know what? The woman, this doesn't go away from her. Yeah, you're right. Your son is affected by it. He's going to have this on his conscience, but you know what? He should. That woman should not. That woman did nothing wrong. I hope this stays with your son. I hope he learns a million lessons from this. I hope he talks about it all the time. I hope it changes who he is. But this woman had no choice in the matter.
One of the things that came up that was also in other parts of the letter and also came up in the trial is this was a swim star. And the dad claims that the boy was taken under the wing of the older players and there was a drinking culture and, you know, swimming and being part of this culture, you know, almost kind of forced his hand a little bit in, you know, him raping this girl. And people make mistakes, right? You can have a moment where you thought I should walk home because I've been drinking, but instead Definitely. You get behind the car and you make a mistake. Yep. Okay. It was an accident. It was a mistake and something terrible happened. But that's not what the dad's saying. Dad's saying that he did 20 minutes of bad, but he shouldn't have to really pay for it. And there's like no understanding of what happened to the girl. So equally, really shaking me to the core is the victim's statement that she made in court. And what makes me really sad is that the judge seems to have been swayed more by the perpetrator and by the dad than what the girl went through. And this is what she said. She wrote a really long response, which I'm going to actually put up on our website because everyone should read it. It's heart-wrenching, but it's important. Anyway, so she says she's really speaking to the defendant. You said, I want to show people that one night of drinking can ruin a life. Ruin a life, one life, yours, you forgot about mine. Let me paraphrase for you. I want to show people that one night of drinking can ruin two lives, you and me. You are the cause, I am the effect. You have dragged me through this hell with you, dipped me back into it night again and again. Your damage was concrete, stripped of titles, degrees, enrollment. My damage was internal, unseen. I carry it with me. You took me away. You took away my worth, my privacy, my energy, my time, my safety, my intimacy, my confidence, my own voice until today. If you think I was spared, came out unscathed, today I ride off into the sunset while you suffer the greatest blow, you are mistaken. Nobody wins. We have all been devastated. We have all been trying to figure out, to find some meaning in all of this suffering. I don't know how a judge could really hear the dad's words and this woman's words and go off light on this guy, but
I also even reading that, that's the first time I saw that. And, you know, the idea that the dad, I mean, it's so horrifying. And I just think like, if I'm the dad, if that's my kid, I just try to think about that. If that's my kid, I am so, and I'm not saying, it's a complicated thing, you know, being a parent and how your kid reacts, and you can't control everything. But I'm asking myself repeatedly, what did I do wrong here? Like, how did my son, all right, so let's say there is a culture of drinking and there's this peer pressure culture. How did I raise this boy to succumb to that, right? And then how did I raise this boy who would somehow in his mind be okay with raping
a young woman? Thinking of it differently. I'm thinking, as a parent, if this were my son, I would be saying maybe all those things, but I was saying, now you need to accept responsibility. You did something really, really horrible. You're going to do your time and you're going to make a life for yourself that's going to be changed by the horrible thing that you did. I'm not going to say, just like I'm not going to call my daughter's teacher and say,
right,
you know, she didn't do that well in this test, but
she worked really hard.
You graded her unfairly. Or, yeah, you know, I think parents are stepping in places they shouldn't and not letting their kids feel their failures and take responsibility for their mistakes. And then they're going to do them over and over again. My guess is this dad has probably stepped in a few times before, not on rape, but like little things, maybe. Maybe he was late to the team meeting and he's supposed to not be able to, you're making a funny face at me.
Yeah, I feel like this is kind of speculative. You have no idea if this guy's
Of course. My point is, I don't think parents all of a sudden start jumping in and saving their kids from any kind of trouble. I think it's over a lifetime. And I hope that we keep our kids responsible for their actions. And if they do something bad, then they're going to deal with those consequences. We're going to be supportive. I'm going to be here for you. I'm not going to disown you, but I'm going to hold you responsible.
Up next, we have our interview with, again, one of my favorite people, and I would say the best owner in sports, Jeannie Buss of the Los Angeles Lakers.
But first, how about a brief ad?
How about a brief ad?
Well, Earl, I'd like to talk to you again about my Tower Garden by Juice Plus. So for those who don't know about it, it's an amazing, ingenious vertical garden. It grows up. It's all the joys of gardening without any of the hassle. There's a 20-gallon reservoir that holds the water and a tower that has space for 20 vegetables, herbs, and flowers.
Did you say herbs or herbs?
I say herbs.
I used to say herbs.
That's wrong.
Go ahead.
Well, I'd like to give an update on our garden. We started a few weeks ago, and last week I did report we had 4 acorn squashes. We did lose a squash.
Wait, moment of silence for the squash, please.
Yeah.
Thank you.
But I am proud to say that our kale, arugula, spinach, and cilantro are growing like weeds.
Plus three of the acorn squash are kicking some serious butt.
Yeah, they have made it. We have tomatoes and peppers and basil. They're taking a little bit longer to get going, but we are making progress. So I love this thing. And if you want to learn more about the absolutely amazing Tower Garden, contact Lisa Blaisdell by checking out her Tower Garden website at lisablaisdell.towergarden.com. And don't forget to mention the sports parent to receive 5 free seedlings with your order of a Tower Garden.
Our guest Q&A today is Jeannie Buss, who is a part owner and president of the Los Angeles Lakers. And let me ask you, Earl.
Yes.
How many times have I said how kind Jeannie Buss is? I'm being serious about this.
Oh my gosh, he loves you. But not only that, I feel like I know you, and not because you're a famous person or because you have a really important job, but because Jeff talks about you all the time.
No, now you're making me sound crazy.
In a nice way. He thinks you're a really nice person.
Well, and I just want to say, for people who don't know this, I wrote about this on my website once, is I was teaching at Chapman University in Orange, California. And I sent Jeannie a message, and I was, you know, I knew her from doing my book, Showtime, and she was very gracious about the book. And I sent her a message, and I said, is there any way you'd come down and talk to my class? And I swear to God, I honestly thought, this is a 1 in 100. Like, who the traffic alone, who wants to deal with this crap? And Jeannie Buss says she'll come down, shows up on time. Now, this is my favorite part. I feel like 9 out of 10, someone drives them there. They drop them off. You know, like, I get a call from the driver. Miss Bus doesn't know where you are. She calls me. She's like, where am I supposed to park? You know, like, and she comes walking up, and she's like, oh, I'm sorry, I'm late, blah, blah, blah. It was just like, so now you're doing, you came to my class at Chapman. You're doing this. Jeannie, thank you very much. We appreciate it.
I think you guys are now my new favorite couple because you're just so adorable sitting in the closet doing work.
Thank you. So we surpassed Linda and Kurt Rambis, you're saying?
Yes.
Nice. So we talk, you know, on this show, we talk about sort of parenting issues and sports and kids and the combination. And, you know, I was talking to Catherine about this, that you are someone who was brought up in a very sort of unique environment, which is you were brought up under a spotlight. Your dad was uber famous. And somehow you have turned out, to the best of my knowledge and your knowledge, to be sane. And you're not a Kardashian. You're not seeking out the spotlight. You're literally here with our podcast and our 500 listener. You know, like, you're just like a normal person. How did fame not warp you?
You know, my dad, he, for him, it was all about education. It was all about work, you know, spending time reading, making yourself better. He was always challenging us. You know, we would play a game called school. That was our fun game. And all it was him asking us, you would say, I want a math question or a science question. And, you know, he would come up with the question. And if you got the question right, you got a piece of candy. That was fun for us. And he made it all about, you know, reading and making yourself better. Preparing yourself. So I think your parents have so much of an influence. I mean, obviously, a complete influence on you. And my dad was always about education being the great equalizer of society, that, you know, having an education would, you know, you could pull yourself up from whatever circumstance you were in.
That's so interesting. Do you feel like that when you were growing up, did you feel like you were growing up in a famous family, or did you feel like just a regular kid in a regular family? Because when you're talking about education, it just seems like, you know, that's what everyone wants for their kids. They want them to get a good education so they can get a good job. But you had a big advantage, and it sounds like you kind of just, that wasn't so much part of the deal.
Well, I mean, you know, we obviously, you know, growing up, we were around athletes and these really successful people for their physical, you know, power and, you know, talent. But, you know, my dad also valued the professors, the teachers, the educators, the, you know, the thinkers, and those were as big of celebrities to him as, you know, Magic Johnson or, you know, any baseball player or horse jockey or whatever you want to say that we were around. He really, really, really valued the people that used their mind.
So did you ever go through did you have a phase, we have a daughter who's entering the teens and, you know, she certainly has her moments. Like, did you have your moments where my dad owns the Lakers or whatever? Did you have that moment even or no?
Oh yeah. I mean, I was, you know, when I was that age, 14, my dad owned a professional tennis team. And so there was, a player that, you know, I, you know, started a fan club and I was so, you know, enamored with, you know, his cute smile and all that. That's just a teenage girl thing. But, yeah, I mean, I was blessed to have access to, you know, sit in the front row of any concert that played at the Forum. So I was definitely spoiled.
Jeannie, would you rather see Hall & Oates in concert or Elton John? Because we have this debate every week.
No, you don't.
No, we really do. I swear to God, we do. Who would you, if you had to see one, you got tickets to Hall & Oates or Elton John, who do you go see?
Oh, Elton John. For
Thank you. It's about time someone is like clear-headed and thinking straight. Oh, I mean, who's going to put on a better show?
Oh, come on, man. Let me answer this. You've dealt with, you know, in through the years with the Lakers, you've dealt with tons and tons and tons of young men. Some young men from rough backgrounds, some guys from pretty privileged backgrounds, young men whose dads played in the NBA, young men who came from single mother homes. Can you tell the difference on what sort of upbringing they had when you're dealing with these guys? Or is it all just a wash?
I think that, you know, everybody's different. Every individual's different. And I don't think you can generalize and say, you know, players that came from a one parent background or would be any better than another. I think you have to see a personality type and maybe understand certain motivations or you know, how you deal. You have to deal with each player individually, but it's also important to know the background. But that doesn't, you know, how they grew up doesn't dictate how you treat them. It's, you have to see what the individual is like.
Wait, top of your head, who had the most, of all the players you've had, who had the most endearing, like, mother? Did you ever have, like, an absolutely endearing mother of one of your
I'd ladies? Have to say Derek Fisher, his mom, Annette, you know, just one of the sweetest people I ever met. You know, just every person that met her, because, you know, she lived in Arkansas, and when she'd come out to see Derek, you know, people just lined up to get a hug from her and talk to her, because she's just a wonderful woman.
So parents today are pushing their kids to be these amazing athletes from such a young age. We've been talking about this and how, you know, there's private, you know, courses and travel teams and leagues and all this stuff. And the holy grail is so that your kid can get a scholarship, and even better, so that he can be a professional athlete. Do you think it's all that, or do you think parents are misguided in this singularity and this one focus?
I think sports are so important in terms of just having purpose. That, and, you know, I mean, again, I have to throw out the disclaimer. I'm not a parent, so I can't, I don't want to judge how other people parent. But from what I see in my experience, I think that sports really helps through some awkward teenage times when you feel maybe isolated, or you feel that you don't really fit in. And being on a team can really make you fit in, because you have teammates, and they, you know, it's kind of, it becomes a community that you're a part of. It gives you structure, it gives you a peer group, and, you know, to play sports, you have to have some level of, you know, discipline, commitment, you know, accountability. So I think the other kids that you're around are the right, you know, are good influence for that age group. So, you know, I myself grew up at the beginning of Title IX, and I probably wouldn't have played sports, but they kind of made me play sports, because if you didn't have a girls' golf team, then you couldn't have a boys' golf team. And so they told me, you're on the high school golf team. And I said, I've never played golf in my life. And they said, well, we'll teach you. You know, you'll be happy that you get this opportunity. And it turned out to be one of the greatest things that happened to me in high school, was playing on the girls' golf team. And, you know, I made friendships that have lasted a lifetime. And I think that it got me out of my shell. It, you know, gave me a group of people I could relate to that probably was a big benefit for me growing up.
So I have to ask you a question. It's not often that I talk to a woman who's a big boss and a big boss in a man's world. So I'd like to know, I mean, what's that like on the day to day? Do you feel like you're in a man's world? Or do you feel like it's your world?
I think that, you know, in the business that I'm in, it's so competitive that people will find any way to get an advantage over you. And if you know, playing the no girls allowed in the clubhouse card to make you feel left out or to you know, kind of shut you out. I've had that played on me many times. And, you know, so I think that, you know, it's tough, you know, just being different in the workplace, and whether it's by gender or any other thing that makes you different. People are going to, you know, find any way to get leverage over you. And if you allow that to happen, then it does become a weakness.
Good answer. All right, Jeannie, we're going to hit you up now with our weekly tradition, which is five quick questions. Are you prepared for this?
Yes.
And if you get them all right, you actually win any article of clothing hanging in our closet. Question number one, what is the most obscure country you've ever been to?
Obscure. I guess Finland, you know, it's just kind of a random place. But when I went to Russia in the 80s and you had to kind of fly through Finland, and I think I literally kissed the ground when I got off the airplane when I got to Finland, because Russia was such a bad experience back then.
You're walking down the street, we'll just say any street. Donald Sterling is on the other side. He doesn't see you, though. Are you, hey, Don, or do you just kind of walk by quietly?
That's an interesting question, because I'm surprised I haven't run into him or I haven't heard a lot about him. I would probably give him, you know, a greeting, or just to see how he's doing. He probably would forget who I was. He probably wouldn't even know.
Yeah. I know some stories about him. Where's the, if we're new to Southern California, if we want to have the absolute best meal in Southern California, where should we go?
I would say Petros in Manhattan Beach. He flies in certain ingredients from Greece, and you just feel like you're on a mini vacation. It just, the taste is that good.
I need a mini vacation.
Where's the place we went?
MB Post.
MB Post. You've been to MB Post?
Oh, that's pretty good too. I like that place. Like that's fun.
Okay, where, all right, this is a trivia question, Lake or trivia. Where did Smush Parker go to college?
Fordham.
Oh! Wow.
And I'll tell you why I know that, because Denzel Washington, that's where he went to school. And he was a celebrity that really supported Smush Parker when Smush was a Laker.
Yeah, nice.
Wow,
one.
That's impressive right there.
All right, final question. For all I know, they've called, although I kind of doubt it. Dancing with the Stars calls. They beg you. Do you do it?
I think it's the other way around. I think I would beg them to be on the show.
Oh, my God.
Oh, we're starting the campaign tomorrow.
Would you do it?
We're on it.
Would you really do it?
Of course. But, I had a conversation with somebody the other day about it, and I said, I'd be so bad. And he said, well, no, they would like that because they need people who will lose. Thanks.
Well, you know what we're going to do, Fugini? We're going to get you on it, and we're going to make sure the other contestants are like Todd Bridges, Charlotte Ray, you know, a bunch of people you're guaranteed to kind of... Henry Winkler. You're going to kick their ass, and you're going to go off, and you're going to be done.
I mean, maybe
Smush Parker. We'll get Smush Parker on there.
No, I think the person who should do it is Kobe. Got to get Kobe on the show.
You think he would do it?
I think he needs to compete. He needs to do stuff to feed his competitive nature, and that I think he'd be fantastic.
Wow! All right, we're
work nominating on you both.
Yeah, we're gonna nominate you both. Jeannie Buss, you can follow on Twitter at Jeannie Buss. I am telling you from firsthand experience, there is no nicer, kinder of a sports executive, and no better of a franchise to deal with from my experiences with the book. So, Jeannie, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you, my new favorite couple.
Thanks for joining us in the closet.
Thank you.
So, do you? You've got to understand from that why I am a enormous Jeannie Buss fan, though.
I do, and I have to say, she's beautiful. She's sweet. She's friendly. She's powerful. I really enjoyed it. I only wish that I had not been in my pajamas while we Skyped, and I maybe had myself look a little better.
I just want to say again, the owner of the Lakers just called. She ordered Skype right? She didn't even know how to use Skype. She was like, kind of texted me in a little panic. She ordered Skype, decided I'm going to do this just out of like, I mean, do you think James Dolan, owner of the Knicks, would ever do that?
No.
I assure you, that guy would not.
Yeah.
Love Jeannie Buss.
Yeah, she was lovely.
So now we have our big, now our, I guess we can say, we can't say, I was going to say annual, but our regular 1 minute debate.
Yep.
And today is a really, really.
It's an important one.
It's a what?
Important one.
I'd say it's important for national security.
Maybe.
I'd say it's important for the future of this country.
Yep.
And I'd say it's important for our marriage, the survival of this marriage.
Yep.
And it is. Go ahead, you do it.
Slushy versus Slurpee.
Dun, dun, dun. Who's going first?
I think it's you, actually.
I think it is me.
Okay.
30 seconds on the clock.
You're taking Slurpee? Duh.
Slushy is crap. Why would I do that?
Okay.
Like I'm trying to bias already. Here we go. The Slurpee. And ready, set, go. Slurpee is sold at 7-Eleven, and it just kicks ass. First of all, there's always different flavors, but I'm just going to stick to one, the Coca-Cola Slurpee. It is insanely refreshing. It is very affordable. And unlike the slushy, which you can find nowhere, the Slurpee is at every 7-Eleven all over the place. Second of all, the 7-Eleven app is awesome. So you buy five, you get one free. My son loves it. My daughter loves it. I don't know anyone who doesn't like the Slurpee. The slushy, nobody gives a crap. The other thing about the slushy is you run out of water. If you slurp from the bottom, it all runs out, and then you're stuck with ice. What you got, home slice? You ready?
I'm ready.
Ready, set, go.
Okay, I might have an uphill battle here, and yes, it isn't sold everywhere, but that's because it's special, okay? There are little teeny tiny balls of ice in every slushy. There aren't just like six flavors available. There's usually like 40 flavors, and they're like real flavors. They're not like Coke. And why would you want a Coke that has, it's flat and is like mushy with ice? Why not just drink a Coke that has bubbles? I would take the slushy any day, and everyone I know who's got like good taste buds would take that.
Mert, you just got your butt kicked. The one thing that you're missing here is you said, why would everybody want, like, everybody wants a Slurpee. The Slurpee is beloved.
I don't want a Slurpee.
You just don't like the Slurpee. You actually don't like Slurpee.
No, I don't like Slurpee. You know I don't like a Slurpee. Every time I try it, thinking I might like it, I don't like it.
Are you even American?
I am American. Okay, so would you please tell us who won this debate? I feel like maybe you're going to vote for Jeff, but I want to know who out there actually likes the slushy and support me on this. So tweet us at The Family Coach or at Jeff Perlman. Use the hashtag TheSportsParent so we can see your comments. Find us on Facebook at Jeff Perlman, and you can find me at The Family Coach. We'll put links and information from today's topics that we discuss in the show on thesportsparentpodcast.com.
Brand new website.
Yep. Jeff's website is, I'm going to say the www, because that's how I like to say it, .jeffperlman.com. And you can check out his amazing blog and look at his quaz, which is Jeff's Q&A series.
And check out Catherine's website, thefamilycoach.com. We'd like to thank you all for listening. Don't forget to subscribe to The Sports Parent on iTunes so you don't miss an episode. And if you liked our show, or even just moderately liked our show, or even didn't like our show, please go to iTunes and give us a 5-star rating and a review if you can. All people give us a 5-star rating will receive a piece of clothing from Catherine's wardrobe. Also, if you have any topics you would like for us to discuss on the show, send us an email to Catherine at catherine@thefamilycoach.com. Audio production assistant from Andrew Perella. Music from the killer MC White Owl, new album out, and Static Selecta. Until next week's episode of The Sports Parent, win or lose, take your kids for ice cream after the game.